Listen, children, to a story that was written long ago about a kingdom on a mountain and a valley folk below. On the mountain was a treasure buried deep beneath the stone, and the valley people swore they'd have it for their very own. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. You can justify it in the end. But there won't be any trumpets blowing come the judgment day on the bloody morning after. One tin soldier rides away. So the people of the valley sent a message up the hill, asking for the buried treasure, tons of gold for which they'd kill. Came an answer from the kingdom, with our brothers we will share all the riches up our mountain, all the secrets buried there. Now the valley swore with anger, mount your horses, draw your sword. And they killed the mountain people, so they won their just reward. Now they stood beside the treasure on the mountain, dark and red, turned the stone and looked beneath it. Peace on earth was all it said. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. You can justify it in the end. There won't be any trumpets blowing come the judgment day on the bloody morning after. One tin soldier rides away. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. You can justify it. You can justify anything, just about. Especially if you're a government. Especially if you're the United States government. They're the worst offenders. They're always out there saving people's freedom. Killing, torturing, destroying for the good of the people. Doesn't it make you proud to be an American? You know, I'd like to be able to be proud of my country, but it's been a very long time since I felt I could. That's why I'm here every Thursday night with my co-host, Mike Palachuk, to tell you about the things that are wrong with our country and the things that are wrong with the rest of the world. But also, and this is the most important part, we tell you how it could be better. Because that's what we're all about, making things better. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Chuck, tonight we welcome special guests Michael Annis, Karen Kitkowski, Phil Ferruccio, and Julius Olifong. And so tonight we are joining together for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Duluth, Minnesota, Denver, Colorado, Mount Jackson, Virginia, also in Cameroon, and also wherever you are. My recommended for this week, films, Waco, Rules of Engagement. Also a film documentary on YouTube, We Need to Talk About Sandy Hook. Also YouTube, The Trouser Bomb at the Boston Marathon by P.K. Boston. YouTube, The Real Reasons Why Princess Diana Was Assassinated, XMI Agent Testifies. On Oklahoma City, a film called A Noble Lie. Also, another film, I think you can find it on YouTube, RFK Must Die. Also, you can find this on YouTube, also on, can't think of the company right now. It's called Wellstone, They Killed Him. Also, the Black Op Radio Archives on the JFK assassination. To learn about the RFK assassination and the Martin King assassination, Google the name William Pepper. To learn more about the Boston bombing and Sandy Hook, go to memoryholeblog.com. To be updated weekly on what's happening around the globe, read Information Clearinghouse and Citizens for Legitimate Government and False Flag Weekly News on No Lies Radio, Thursdays with Jim Fetzer and Kevin Barrett. It does not work to go to the New York Times and the Our Town Weekly Advertiser or National Public Radio or The Nation or Progressive Magazines or even Common Dreams or The Jon Stewart Show. I've tried that. You've tried that. It simply does not work. The truth about our lives and our world is out there, but you have to know where to look. And probably the best of all is The Real Deal by Jim Fetzer. Go to YouTube, search for The Real Deal by Jim Fetzer, the most recent, number 79, about Operation Jade Helm and the most recent hoax operation, the Chattanooga shootings. We cannot forget Wolfgang Halbig, YouTube, Sandy Hook, staged government, community capstone, exercise, false flag. It's a long title to remember, but just search Wolfgang Halbig, H-A-L-B-I-G, and YouTube, and you'll find it. And for the Chattanooga hoax marine shooting, go to YouTube and the videos of Truth Virus. Geez, who can name them all? Since 9/11, all the fake government shootings, who can name even the list of the past few months? Charlie Hebdo is now ancient history. There's the Black Church shooting hoax, and yada, yada, it goes on and on. Any guess why? Any answers why? If you watch Fetzer's most recent show, number 79, The Real Deal, he might have some answers for us. Have you read Dave McGowan's Program to Kill, telling us how all the serial killer events of the last century were also government ops? And now we've got this stuff. Why? Why do some people want to go to so much trouble to fool people, to kill people in order to rule people, to become richer than other people? To me, it's just a lot of trouble to go to when we only live for a short time anyway. Why not just go fishing? To me, it's all very confusing, but I do believe it's happening. And if we would like to understand what's happening, we can read and listen to Barrett, James Tracy, Fetzer et al. And if you don't want to understand, well, in the words of Rosanna Dana, one of the earliest famous American fake news persons, never mind. And now for another episode of Waterboarding Ruth Payne, sponsored by Mr. Bubble. If we are going to torture people who we say we think are terrorists, but we know are not really terrorists because we did 9/11, there are no terrorists, no Al-Qaeda, no reason for war, and really no information we can gain other than to perpetuate the lie, go deeper into the story of the lie, build and embellish the lie fable, then why not also waterboard people who we know are terrorists, who were in fact our terrorists, who helped us to lie a long time ago and overturn our own country? And this terrorist is one of the last remaining terrorists who really was there, who really knows the truth, and what she knows is actually real. No need to fake kill her and fake bury her at sea. She is really Ruth Payne. She is alive, 81, living in Santa Rosa, lucid, articulate, and knowledgeable about the true history of the U.S. One or two or maybe three quick sessions, which are not really such a big deal anyway, right, would change the course of this whole country. Just one little goon afternoon in Santa Rosa. The committee to waterboard Ruth Payne, Lee Harvey Oswald's landlady, CIA agent who is still living, still knows what really happened. It's not really that bad anyway. We are the committee to the waterboard Ruth Payne, endorsed by Alan Dulles, Dick Cheney, George Bush, John Yoo, Barack Obama, 7 out of 9 dentists, and folks like you. Sponsored by Mr. Bubble. Gets you so clean, your mother won't know you.
And now, a country and Western salute to the troops. Tell them the truth. Don't allow them to waste their lives in the military. Sponsored by Gillette. The recently celebrated July 4th is America's most important national holiday celebrating American independence from Great Britain. On July 4th, 1776, America's founding fathers declared that the 13 colonies were no longer colonies, but an independent country in which the rights of Englishmen would prevail for all citizens and not only for King George's administrators. On July 4th, all across America, there were patriotic speeches about our soldiers who gave their lives for their country. to an informed person, these speeches are curious. I'm hard-pressed to think of any examples of our soldiers giving their lives for our country. U.S. Marine General Smedley Butler had the same problem. He said that his Marines gave their lives for United Fruit Company's control of Central America. War is a racket, said General Butler, pointing out that U.S. participation in World War I produced 21,000 new American millionaires and billionaires. When General Butler said war is a racket, he meant that war is a racket for a few people getting rich on the backs of millions of dead people. According to the article in the American Journal of Public Health, during the 20th century, 190 million deaths could be directly and indirectly related to war. The only war fought on U.S. territory was the war against Southern secession. In this war, Irish immigrants fresh off the boat gave their lives for American empire. As soon as the South was conquered, the Union forces were set loose on the Plains Indian and destroyed them as well.
Empire over life, that has always been Washington's guiding principle. America's wars have always been fought elsewhere. Cuba, Haiti, Mexico, Philippines, Japan, Germany, Korea, Vietnam, Panama, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Somalia. Washington even attacks countries with which the U.S. is not at war, such as Pakistan and Yemen, and engages in proxy wars. The U.S. launched 201 overseas military operations between the end of World War II in 2001, and since then, others, including Afghanistan and Iraq. Not a single one of these wars and military operations had anything whatsoever to do with defending the U.S. population from foreign threats. Not even Japan and Germany posed a threat to the U.S. Neither country had any prospect of invading the U.S., and neither country had any such war plans. Is there anyone so foolish that to think that Grenada or the Sandinistas were a threat to the U.S., that North Korea or North Vietnam comprised threats to the U.S.? Yet the Korean and Vietnam Wars were treated as if the fate of the U.S. hung in the balance. The conflicts produced voluminous, dire predictions and strategic debates. The communist threat replaced the Hitler threat. The American empire was at risk from third world peoples. Dominoes would fall everywhere. In the U.S., patriotism and militarism have become synonyms. The Declaration of Independence was not only a declaration of independence from King George III, but also a declaration of independence from unaccountable, tyrannical government.
The oath of office commits the U.S. office holder to the defense of the U.S. Constitution from enemies, foreign and domestic. In the 21st century, Americans' worst enemies are not Al-Qaeda, Iran, Russia, and China. America's worst enemies are our own presidents who have declared repeatedly that the orchestrated war on terror gives them the right to set aside the civil liberties guaranteed to every citizen by the U.S. Constitution.
A country and Western salute to the troops. Tell them the truth. Don't allow them to waste their lives in the military. Brought to you tonight by Gillette. Our first guest of the evening is Julius Alafong. Julius Alafong comes to us each month from Cameroon. He is a writer and activist, and we are very happy to hear from Julius Alafong every month. And Chuck will be queuing up Julius right about now.
Good evening, Chuck. Good evening, Mike. Today is a very sad day for Cameroon, especially in Marwa, the far north region. Today we've had a suicide bomb attack by a Boko Haram militant. And this is the second time this attack takes place in a large urban area of Cameroon. The first Boko Haram attack was carried out by a female terrorist woman who surrounded all her body with bomb and got it exploded in the midst of people. The second one is still the same, and we've lost more than 30 people already. This raises the question, many questions. How do we fight against an enemy whose political goals are not known up to now? Because with the recent change in the elections in Nigeria, we thought things are going to change, but as time passes, it gets worse and worse. Some of our soldiers have also lost their life. But however, the president of Nigeria, Muhammadu Buhari, is expected in Yaounde this late July. He is coming to Yaounde to have a discussion with the president of Cameroon, President Paul Biya. And the discussions will be centered around what to do, the strategies to put in place in order to really, really make life hard for these Boko Haram militants who are claiming our lives as days pass by. I was planning to make a presentation on the visit of the French president from Francois Hollande to Cameroon, and because of this event, you will permit me change what I had to present this evening. Instead, I will be presenting a reflection, a little write-up, somewhat of comfort to some of us Cameroonians, to those who are bereaved from the terrorist attack, the lives that I've claimed, so that some people can just minimize the pains that are going through. I will start my write-up. It is called A Reflection on Time. Time, they say, is like an ever-rolling stream. It passes on unnoticeably, but it bears all its sons and daughters away. It is like a dream. It lingers for a while and then it comes to pass. Like the wind, you almost hear it whispering past you. Whither it cometh or whither it goeth, it is difficult to conjecture, but it passes on. It brings good fortune. It brings bad fortune. You cannot place an exact finger on it because it passes on. The psalmist of the Bible tells us, in quote, "A thousand years to you are like one day. They are like yesterday, already gone, like a short hour in the night," end of quote. And of the human beings he adds, "You carry us away like a flood. We last no longer than a dream. We are the wheat that sprout in the morning, that grow and burst into bloom, that dry up and die in the evening. Time passes on. It comes, and with its ugliness and its beauty. Its passage is an illusion, and we leave it only imagining when and where it comes, and when and where it goes. We are born with time, and we die with time. Our lifespan is measured, but our destiny is never asked to determine. What a mystery time is. It takes us to visualize the very best that should come to us, but it stupefies us by its mischievous entrances and exits and its shabby manner with which it treats us. Even the most erudite scholars have failed to measure its flow or passage. All we know is that it passes on. We could be enraged by what it does, the dispensation its passage may cause us, but that's all we can do. Our vision of it is limited because time is immeasurable. It is infinite. It is everlasting. People come and people go. They are born and then they die. Time has passed on them. All we do is only watch as the seasons do come and go. And those we love dearly go with them. Alas, even those we do not care about much. For our knowledge of time is engulfed in the nebulous, if not obscure limitedness of our wisdom. For who can tell when they shall die? Yet all we know, when we are born, we will come, death will come someday. But when? Even the philosopher will shrug his shoulders and tell us, there is a time for everything. A time to be born and a time to die. A time for planting and a time for harvesting. And all of life's activities are placed under the stringent measurement of time, of which we are ignorant. For everything, according to the philosopher, that happens in this world happens at the time God chooses. He chose the time he created the universe. He chose the time all of what we seem to know to happen, the fall of man through Adam, to the forgiveness of the same through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. But that's all we know. He has placed a dark cloud over our eyes, blindfolding us and making us unable to see beyond what we already think we know, most of which is vain and worldly. And it come to pass that your loved ones was here. He has gone. And with the passage of time, the memory of such a one is obliterated. Only glimpses of the times you spend together opaquely show their faces. And like we all say, life continues. But it has come to pass. Those moments of sorrow that daily overshadow the joys of living a healthy and full life. No doubt, the philosopher warns us that dead flies can make a whole bottle of perfume stink, just like a little stupidity can cancel out the greatest wisdom. And to the young, he says, enjoy your youth. Be happy while you are still young. Do what you mean to do and follow your heart's desire. But remember, at the appointed time, God is going to judge you according to whatever you do. And then he cautions that while we are young, we should remember our Creator before those dismal days and years do come when we will say we do not enjoy life anymore. For many, today has come and will go. We will bury some today and tomorrow and the next day. Yes, all within the concept of the passing of time. May we stay conscious that time is not ours to determine, and the little we may have should be measured with wisdom. And to those for whom we weep today, because time has stolen them from us, may they go with the peace of God, because only He knows what time actually is. No one knows tomorrow, for tomorrow is not ours to determine. Thank you, Choke. Thank you, Mike, for giving me this opportunity. May you join us, pray for the souls of those we've lost this evening in Marwa. Greeting to our listeners. See you next month. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Julius, for a heartfelt and very touching reflection on time and death and life. It's hard to know what to say to follow that up. It was really just beautiful. Mike, Chuck, did you want to say something about next week's show?
Yeah, Chuck, I was going to put in a plug for next week's show. Next week is the we have a Five Thursday month this month, so we have an extra show. And what we're going to do is we're going to have a UFO show next week, and we have three guests lined up from MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and we're going to be speaking to them. They are representatives from, I think that we have Minnesota, Florida, and we also have Ohio. So we'll be speaking with those MUFON representatives next month. Chuck, this UFO show wasn't your idea. It was mine, because I believe in UFOs, of course. What do you think of UFOs?
Well, I don't really know, Mike, but it's certainly not... it's certainly not impossible. I think there is a lot of evidence for UFOs, and some of it is real.
Yeah, so do I. I think, you know, all these, just like in Bigfoot sightings, for me anyway, the there are so many sightings that it only takes one for it to be real. And there are thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe, of these UFO sightings, and people see them, and people see things in the sky, and they put it on TV. They wouldn't put it on TV if it wasn't real, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yep. Yeah, I do believe in UFOs. I believe, well, when I was a little bit younger, I saw, you know, some people have seen, they talk about the orange ball of light, and they don't know what it is. And I saw, driving in Nebraska one time, I was driving really late at night, and I saw this orange ball of light. It was up in front of me and to my left, and I can see it now. And I don't know, you know, how big it was is depending how far it was away. I don't know, big as a basketball or... Anyway, it went on, and it was keeping up with, or I was keeping up with it. It was tracking me by being ahead of me, and then it was gone. So... it was something. I don't know what it was, but whether it was terrestrial or extraterrestrial, who knows? But it's these things like UFOs that make up the New American Dream Radio Show, because there are no wrong questions.
This week on TV on Tuesday, make sure to catch the remake of the 1930s comedy mystery film, The Thin Man, and on Wednesday, The Straw Man. With your acting ensemble, Dylan Stormroof, Jared Loudner, Adam Lanza, James Holmes, and Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz. And showing at the Cinema Theater downtown, all across the country, the same movie, all of 4,000 different theaters, the same movie, Wag the Dog 4. Go see it. It's the only choice you got. Go see it. Wag the Dog 4. It's air conditioned. There's popcorn. Hey, cats, this is radio station KWIS, and we're playing the newest hits. This Saturday's Garage Sale Day. Pick up the list of sales right here at the station. And don't miss Catfish Day down by the river. There's games for the kids, bands, refreshments, and lots of stuff. And here's the Sunshine Sisters with their latest Boogie Woogie Isis Boy of Company B. He was a famous trumpet man from out of Chattanooga way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was a top man at his craft, but when his number came up and he was gone with the draft, he's an ISIS now, blowing reveille. He's the Boogie Woogie ISIS Boy at Company B. He puts the boys to sleep with boogie every night and wakes them up the same way in the early light. They clap their hands and stamp their feet because they know how he plays when someone gives him a beat. He really breaks it up when he plays reveille. He's the Boogie Woogie Isis Boy of Company B.
And now for another episode of The Lives of the Cowboys. From last week, stay clear, focused, fat, and stupid. The colonel led his men in their morning mantra and then held out a box of red Twizzlers for Duke and Bubba Steve and the others to dig into on their way out the door. Hit the streets and be careful out there, boys. Information is everywhere, I'm afraid. But, hey, wait. The colonel stopped them to hand them the new updated face sheet from Homeland Security and Walmart on ISIS and how they are coming over here. And they will probably be here soon, maybe later today. And this could pretty much be it. It's kind of the deal. So, said the colonel, holding the door for Duke, Bubba, Steve, and the other officers. They stared at the open door in the street and Mrs. Thomas clutching her purse to her chest on her way to the post office. Go on, said the colonel, taking his boot and his knee to shove them all out the door. Get. And this week, we find Duke and Bubba Steve sitting in the squad car on the curb, staring straight ahead, eating popcorn, on homecoming parade duty. The crowd pushed up tight to the streets. The day was bright and blue. The bands marched past. A team floated past on a flatbed. And then, Bubba Steve grabbed for the radio mic and dropped it. His eyes were wide. Duke choked on his popcorn. It was happening. Coming straight down Main Street was a float. A big, black float. The Deathmobile. Standing on the front of the float in a pirate bandana, pirate shirt, pirate pants, and pirate sword was John Belushi. He ripped off his shirt and displayed a white T-shirt with pizza stains and ISIS written across the chest in pencil. Ramming speed, shouted Belushi, pointing his sword at Duke and Bubba Steve in the cruiser. Duke turned the key and pumped the gas. Bubba Steve tossed his popcorn out the window. The Deathmobile loomed large, closing in on them, headed straight for the cruiser. ISIS coming right at them at ramming speed. Their worstest ever nightmare yet. Right out in front of everybody. Duke and Bubba Steve's moms and dads and brothers, sisters, girlfriends, teachers. ISIS, the cousin of Al and Bob Qaeda, trying to take over the world. And they had to go through Duke and Bubba Steve to do it. Stay tuned next week for another episode of The Lives of the Cowboys, sponsored by Twizzlers, when we will hear Duke say, Allah Akbar, and we will hear Bubba Steve say, I know, right? The Lives of the Cowboys, sponsored by Red Twizzlers. And now a public service announcement from the Jade Helm HR PR Department, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Walmart, and Martha Stewart. We are now on triple secret orange alert. Pull the apple pies from the windowsills, secure the baseball fields, the Chevrolets, secure Grandma. Bubba Qaeda and Bubba Sis have been spotted in the U.S. They are born in a small town in little pink houses. Getting their thrills on Blueberry Hill, getting their kicks on Route 66. Be afraid. Be very afraid. And now for another episode of The Lives of the Cowboys. We see John Belushi and the ISIS Deathmobile headed straight for Duke and Bubba Steve on the curb on Main Street in the cruiser in the middle of the homecoming parade.
They leap out just as the Deathmobile smashes the front quarter panel. They land in the street and on the sidewalk as the car explodes. John Belushi, the ISIS leader, leaps above the flames, climbs a fire escape to the top of the Woolworth building. There he looks down upon the whole town, swooping his sword around. Bubba Steve sits on the sidewalk watching. Duke sits in the street looking straight up at ISIS Belushi, who has taken over the town. Dude, Allah effing Akbar, says Bubba Steve, ripping a pack of red Twizzlers with his teeth. I know, right, says Duke.
The Lives of the Cowboys, sponsored by Red Twizzlers in the clear white plastic. And now, a new American dream letter to the editor from Amanda in Amish country, Iowa. Amanda writes, well, in the wake of World War I, erstwhile propagandist and political scientist Harold Laswell famously defined propaganda as the management of collective attitudes and the control over opinion through the manipulation of significant symbols. The extent to which this tradition is enthusiastically upheld in the West and the U.S. in particular is remarkable. The American public is consistently propagandized by its government and corporate news media on the most vital of contemporary issues and events. Deception on such a scale would be of little consequence if the U.S. was not the most powerful economic and military force on Earth. A case in point is the hysteria Western news media are attempting to create concerning the threat posed by the mercenary terrorist army now being promoted as the Islamic State of Iraq and Greater Syria, or ISIS. As was the case with the U.S. intelligence asset and bogey publicized as Al-Qaeda, such entities are apparently by design inadequately investigated and defined by major news media. Absent meaningful historical context, they usually serve as another reason for America's terminal war on terror. A seemingly obvious feature of such terrorist forces left unexamined by corporate media is that they are observably comprised of the same or comparable personnel unleashed elsewhere throughout the Middle East as part of a strategy proposed during the George W. Bush administration in 2007.
With the above observations in mind, ISIS is well-financed, militarily proficient, and equipped with modern vehicles and weaponry. It also exhibits an uncanny degree of media savvy in terms of propagating its message in professional-looking videos and on platforms such as YouTube and Twitter. Western intelligence services, the New York Times reports, claim to be worried about their extraordinary command of seemingly less lethal weapons, state-of-the-art videos, ground images shot from drones, and multilingual Twitter messages. As coverage of the events of September 11, 2001 and subsequent state-sponsored terrorism indicate, such media are essentially a component of the national security state. Their reports and broadcast scripts, all but overtly written by intelligence and military organizations. In the wake of 9/11, U.S. news media seldom asked about the origins of Al-Qaeda, particularly how it was a product of the U.S. intelligence agencies. With the history of Al-Qaeda omitted, the Bush administration was permitted to wage war on Afghanistan almost immediately following those staged attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Yet, as is much the case with today's manufactured ISIS phenomenon, that history was readily available, and its careful public examination might have implicated the United States intelligence community in the 9/11 attacks.
As the U.S. and world approach the 13th anniversary of the most momentous false flag in human history, the American public would be well served to remind itself that ISIS is the new Al-Qaeda. In other words, the new pretext that will in all likelihood be used by to take police state measures at home and military aggression abroad to new, perhaps unprecedented levels. With the above in mind, it is telling that one of the U.S. government's greatest fears isn't ISIS at all. The FBI's most recent threat assessment for domestic terrorism makes no reference to Islamicist terror threats. The Washington Free Beacon reports, despite the Boston Marathon bombing and the 2009 Fort Hood shooting, both carried out by radical Muslim Americans. Instead, the nation's foremost law enforcement agency is preoccupied with what it deems domestic extremism exhibited by its own subjects. A primary manifestation of such extremism is possessing the curiosity to discern and seek out truths and information amidst the barrage of manipulated symbols the government and corporate-controlled media use to undermine a potentially informed public. This has been a letter to the editor from Amanda in Amish Village, Amish Country, in Iowa.
This public service announcement is from the Amish Department of Homeland Security. You want to join, don't you? No, not that. Of course, ISIS is a joke, a propaganda ploy by the American military and media. But the Amish, son, good old Uncle Abram wants you for the U.S. Amish. You could leave America behind without leaving the barn, exist within the belly of the beast by selling pickles and placemats by the roadside to tourists all day long, and wear black just like in your goth high school days. Amish, night camo. Dude. And then when America goes the full Nazi, there will be in perfect position the French resistance with buggies, with the big hats and the black clothes, the horses and the long hobbit beards, and no TV. They won't be able to fool you with their lies or sell you any stupid, silly Subarus, and you will defeat them because you will drive them crazy just by not paying any attention to them. The velvety, silent revolution. Go Amish! Go Amish! Go Amish! The Amish. The few, the proud, the brave.
Our next guest of the evening is Karen Kitkowski. Karen Kitkowski comes to us each month from her home in Mount Vernon, Virginia. She's a former lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. She was at the Pentagon on the day that it was attacked. She's also run for Congress in Virginia. She is a radio host, a writer, and Chuck will be getting Karen on the line right about now.
Hello?
Well, hello, Karen. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Okay, great, great. Good to be here. I had a couple different things I wanted to talk about, but I have to start with Donald Trump. I think everybody's talking about Donald Trump. And, you know, what people like about him, you know, I mean, many people don't want to vote for him, but they like him for some reason. And what they're saying is that he's presenting himself as a non-Washington guy, an outsider, somebody who will stand up against the bureaucracy and criticize them. And, of course, he's a kind of a egotistical, you know, Huey Long kind of character. And what he's advocating, of course, is not healthy for this country at all. You know, he wants to close the borders, and that's you know, appealing to a lot of people, but, you know, you can't... We want trade. We want freedom. We want liberty. We'd like to have more movement back and forth across the borders, both us leaving, Americans leaving and dealing overseas, and people from overseas dealing with us. I mean, that's better for the economy. And really, he's running as a Republican, and this is kind of I thought free trade was a Republican issue. So Trump is advocating something that doesn't quite make sense. He's criticizing Washington, but he's doing it from the standpoint of the strong leader, the strong man perspective. You know, he'll go in and clean up the mess, and he'll go in and mandate this and that. He's running against an over-powerful, over-centralized executive state that we've been living in for 50, 60 years now. He's running against that, and he's doing so by saying, I'll be even stronger. I'll be even more powerful, more centralized. I'll command, you know. And so it's interesting to see how popular he is. And I think since most people, and hopefully not the people listening to this radio station, but most people who are interested in Trump and are appealing, they find him appealing, they haven't really thought through much of anything. This is an emotional type of, you know, a symbol-driven emotional attachment that they have, and that's what Trump is appealing to. So, you know, he has, it's not good. I mean, he's advocating basically more fascism than we currently have in this country, which should be just absolutely an abomination, but it isn't. I mean, it's extremely popular. The fascism we have hasn't been enough. Let's get some more and put a strong man in charge. So that's kind of the Trump campaign. But as he's out there doing that and looking at how people are responding to him, we see, and we've known it already, I mean, every poll they talk about the Congress is like under 10% positive rating, people are unhappy with Washington if you like getting handouts from Washington, you're not happy. And if you don't like paying taxes to Washington, you're not happy. So that's all the people in this whole country are not happy with Washington. It's not pleasing anybody. And so the Trump phenomena is reflecting that many people feel this way. So I want to tie this in to one of the other big things that's in the news past couple of weeks, and that's the the movement to ban symbols of the Confederacy and symbols of slavery. And I think the whole battle flag of Richmond, rebel flag that's making people unhappy. They want to take it away and not have it, and for good reason, I think, because that symbol for a large number of people in this country, at least 25% of them, see that flag and do not feel happy about it. I mean, they feel possibly threatened. It has been so heavily associated with racism in the past 100 years. So, you know, you can't ask people to unthink what they believe about a symbol. So that symbol is a hurtful symbol, and so we're hearing, you know, the talk pro and con. But what you're seeing, one of the things, and this is as things always are, you never expect, oh, we'll just ban the flag and that'll be it. No, they're going to ban the Richmond flag. And what you're seeing now is a rise in the flying of the actual flag of the Confederacy, which is a little bit different. And if you know what the rebel flag looks like, the flag of the Confederacy is a circle of stars, not too many, just the states that seceded, and three, I think, red and white stripes. So, but they're big, thick stripes. So it's a flag. It looks like a flag, okay? It's not particularly offensive. It's not well known. It's not something that's flown very much. Most people outside of the South don't even know what it looks like. Many people in the South don't know what it looks like. And that's the flag that is emerging to be flown. Now, I think it's kind of good, because if this flag of the Confederacy, which isn't really directly associated with racism and slavery, only because we haven't been taught that it should be, which we had been taught for 50 years, that the rebel flag indeed was related to slavery and racism and promoted that. So this other flag doesn't have those connotations, not directly, not in the culture. The culture doesn't recognize that flag. So what I think is kind of good, and this would be like maybe not an American dream, but this would be one dream, one possibility, is that that flag, or some other symbol, but let's just use that one for now, become kind of a flag of secession, a flag of divorce from Washington, D.C., a flag of, I don't like Washington, D.C. so much that now I'm no longer going to consider myself a part of it, kind of a personal divorce from the United States. Now, am I advocating people give up their citizenship? Sure, actually, I am. I am advocating that, but not to leave the country, because it's our country. This is not our government. So why should we adhere to it, and why should we be loyal to it, and why should we obey it? Another thing in the news which speaks to this is the tragic death of Miss Bland in Dallas, 3 days in prison for what? Not putting her blinker on and failing to put out her cigarette, which was an unlawful order to begin with. Now, this is not the country that any flag that we are aware of waves over. I mean, when we look at old glory, do we think that, you know, some cop's going to pull you over and you don't respect him properly, you don't please him, you don't do exactly what he says, regardless of whether it's a lawful order or not, and you're going to find yourself hung somewhere or driven to suicide, if indeed it was, or murdered even by the state. So that's not my state, and I don't mean Texas. That's not my country, okay? That is not a country I would be ever loyal to. It's not something I bought into. That's not part of the mythology that I was taught. That is what the flag stands for, what this country stands for. So I divorce that. I secede from that. So anyway, I think if we could just educate all these Trump guys that love Trump, because he's leading them down a fascist dictatorship path. I don't think it's going to come to fruition, but the very fact that he is so amazingly popular in just a short amount of time, and why he's popular, shows how dangerously close this country is to really the end, okay, capital E, capital N, capital D. I mean, it is very close in that respect. We're not a free country. We're a surveillance state. And again, people recognize that something's not right. So what I'm saying is, you know, let's divorce that. We've lived together long enough. You know, in a marriage, you might give it 6, 7, 10, 15 years, but if it still doesn't get better, you have to break that up. And this whole, our whole society is understanding of that. We recognize that. So why not something that we never got married to, we never were asked to commit to. Why not we don't, you know, why don't we divorce that? Why don't we secede? Now, you know, so basically, you know, whether you like it or not, I am proposing and supporting any and all secession movements. I mean, Vermont has one. Great. Socialist Vermont, go do your thing. There's a movement in California to break California up into as many as 5 or 6 different smaller states, all of which would be perfectly suitable, and they'd all be bigger than Vermont. So there's lots of things we can do, and I would like to think that the people who find Donald Trump attractive because he's, you know, shaking his fist at Washington, we can all do that in a much safer, more liberty-minded way, peaceful way, by simply divorcing ourselves from this government that never really proposed to us anyway. So anyway, that's kind of what's been on my mind. I don't know if I've used up my time or not, but that's what I'm thinking.
I think there's probably 1 or 2 more minutes, but well, that was fascinating, Karen.
I mean, you know, it's kind of all these different things that are happening, and I think they're connected. I think they're connected, or they could be connected, and that's kind of the way I like to make lemonade out of lemons. Of course, the other thing is this whole totally unrelated, but not really. You know, the Planned Parenthood videos. Have you seen those with the talking about the body parts and stuff? Kind of the market for the body parts. I haven't seen a lot of discussion, mostly horror, about that. But in fact, shouldn't we all be able to? I think there should be a free market in body parts. You know, the mothers of these aborted babies aren't getting anything. There's people lined up waiting for livers and hearts and all kinds of other stuff, and because there's no free market in body parts, we've got people sitting in lists and dying, and then sometimes doing illegal things to try to save their lives. So anyway, I think more freedom will just be the answer, and we're not going to get it in this country. If anybody thinks that, they need to wake up. We are not going to get more freedom in this country. It's already been constrained. It's going to continue to be constrained, and that's why I advocate, you know, divorce, secession, even if it has to be a personal secession. This government is not interested in, our government in the United States, not interested in your freedom, anybody's freedom, and actually fears it quite a lot, which is one of the reasons they're spying on everybody.
Oh, I think you're completely right there. Thank you very much, and we look forward to tonight, we are pleased to welcome back to the show Phil Ferrugio, whose post on World News Trust and Information Clearinghouse reached thousands of people all over the world. Here he is with It's the Empire, stupid!
Okay, good evening, working stiffs. American Lemmings, the Empire's favorite. You know, I just watched a Major League Baseball game on the Boo Tube last night. The home team, like many others recently, was wearing, are you ready for this? Camouflage uniform tops. Now, this is being done to, quote, honor our troops who are at war, unquote. Well, whose war? The Empire's wars of aggression in places we have no business being in? They substituted the reality of it all, which is that our military is illegally occupying and very slyly say that they're at war. Ever watch the NBA playoffs of recent years, whereupon the overwhelming majority of the crowd at home games all wear the same T-shirts? Grown men and women sitting there like the masses of German true believers at a Nuremberg rally in 1935, chanting, defense, defense. When you go to a local city council meeting, they always begin with having everyone stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance, just like we did in elementary school. You stand there, and quite honestly, you feel foolish to have to recite such a thing, as if your very loyalty is being tested. Remember the myth of the lemmings, small Arctic rodents who follow one another over the cliff to their group death? Well, so we have American empire that has, over the period of decades, transformed much of our populace into lemmings. They achieved this with bombarding us through the corporate-run media with misinformation, disinformation, and outright lies. The empire played the fear card over and over. Simultaneously, there was a need for a kind of blind patriotism so that the empire could justify all the dirty deeds that it has been doing and is doing in our name overseas. So the flag was wheeled out along with, as Sinclair Lewis predicted, the cross. The message was clear. We are all over the world to bring democracy. In order to keep the lemmings in line and ready to jump over the cliffs of reason, the empire purposely orchestrated this two-party, one-party system of politics. They made sure the far-right party, the Republicans, stayed far-right, and that their adversaries, the Democrats, moved further to the right while deviously labeling themselves liberal. Boy, did it work for generations, and it will continue to work so long as a majority of working stiffs stay asleep. Never will we hear the hypocrites in Congress or the White House over debate in an end to this obscene military spending, where over 50% of our federal taxes each year go to it, with 1,000 bases in over 100 countries. Never will they debate the need to dismantle Obamacare, not in favor of total private insurance control, but rather to have the same national health coverage that the Brits and the Canadians have. Neither will either party come out for establishing nonprofit, community-owned and run mortgage banks that only charge overhead, so that millions of us who now pay rent could afford to own our own residence. Never will either party admit that private money in electoral campaigns inhibits most of us from obtaining office. Need one go on? Here is the kicker as to why so many of our fellow lemmings are so proud to call themselves Republican or Democrat. The empire made it so that only certain hot-button issues are continuously repeated over and over via the mainstream corporate media controlled by the empire. Abortion, gays marrying, Obamacare, the undocumented, welfare payments, and other so-called entitlements. These are what most of our fellow lemmings become concerned and impassioned about. What WikiLeaks and Edward Snowden revealed about illegal U.S. invasions and occupations, torture, NSA spying on Americans, and of course 9/11, and what may have really happened, these mean squat when compared to the aforementioned issues. What we see is a far right-wing party taking one position and the left-wing party, their friendly adversaries, taking the opposing one. Of course, the military-industrial empire just keeps on chugging along while the children argue. As to who will the lemmings vote for from the one-party syndicate, do you think the empire really cares? The vote, such a cherished right for us all, has been made an exercise in futility by this dumbing down of most of our populace. As long as they have their Walmarts nearby and their electronic gadgets and boob tubes and junk food, thank you.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Hello, everyone. Now for your local Earth news. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachuk with the review of today's news from the Eye of the Hurricane and the Eye of the Blizzard. Tonight, guest editorialist Randall from Stevens Point. Mainstream statists are yucking it up over the so-called paranoia of Texas citizens who are concerned about U.S. military's giant training exercise in the Southwest called Operation Jade Helm. Yuck, yuck, the statists are claiming, those paranoid Texans. The statist idea, of course, is that the military is our friend, our protector, our God. The military establishment and the NSA and CIA keep us safe and secure from the terrorists, the communists, the drug dealers, the illegal aliens, and other scary creatures. Without the military, we'd be speaking German, Russian, terrorist, Korean, Vietnam, Vietnamese, or communist. The military would never do anything bad to the American people.
You'd have an awfully hard time convincing Americans of Japanese, German, and Italian descent of that. Think back to World War II, when the U.S. military, dutifully following orders, rounded up not only Japanese, German, and Italian immigrants, but also American citizens of Japanese, German, and Italian descent, and placed them in well-guarded concentration camps. Yes, I said both immigrants and citizens. Immigrants, people who had left their country of origin to come to America. Nonetheless, they were treated as criminals for having come from a country with whom the United States was now at war.
And just think, American citizens jailed for years in concentration camps, having committed no crime whatsoever either. The discomforting fact is that the U.S. military's roundup and incarceration of thousands of innocent people in concentration camps here in the U.S. was no different in principle from the roundups and incarcerations of millions of innocent people in Europe by the Nazis. Isn't that ironic? They tell us that the good war was about fighting for freedom. Really? You'd have a hard time convincing the innocent Japanese-Americans, German-Americans, and Italian-Americans, and the people who immigrated here, who were incarcerated in U.S. concentration camps of that.
Could it happen again? Of course. And it's a virtual certainty that it would. For one thing, in one of its most shameful and cowardly acts, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the Nazi-like incarceration of all these innocent people, and that decision has never been overturned. It is still the law of the land. In the midst of a real war, what are the chances that the Supreme Court is going to stand up to the Pentagon and the CIA? Nil.
After all, if they wouldn't stand up to them with respect to things like torture, undeclared war, secret surveillance schemes, and other programs that are inherent to totalitarian regimes during the U.S. government's much-vaunted war on terrorism, there is no reasonable possibility they would stand up to them on concentration camps, roundups, and incarcerations in the midst of a real war. Of course, statists would say that was a long time ago. Our military would never do that again. America's founding fathers had it right, and American statists have it wrong with respect to the dangers of standing armies. As history has proved time and time again, the biggest threat to the freedom and well-being of the citizenry lies with standing armies.
Texans are wise to be concerned about Operation Jade Helm. Any people who value a free society would be concerned about such an exercise, not to mention the existence of the gigantic military force that is engaged in such an operation. That's all, folks. That's the news, and we are out of here. Good night and good luck. And so it goes. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. It is what it is. At the end of the day, have a good day. And remember that you can start the revolution today by making direct eye contact with any policeman.
Our next guest of the evening is Michael Annis. Michael Annis comes to us each month from Denver, Colorado. Michael is the executive editor of Howling Dog Press. He is also a poet. He is an activist. And we look forward to listening to Michael each month. And Chuck will be getting Michael on the line right about now.
Hello.
Well, hello, Michael. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Well, hi, Chuck and Mike. Hey, here's a shout-out to Phil. When I was in college, decades ago, I published a newspaper, a newsletter more or less, that was titled The Lemming Progress Report. I'm going to read... Part 11 of Brave New World Order, and I would like to start with a quote, and hopefully I'll have time to end with a poem by Amiri Baraka. We must try to explain why the world today, which is horrible, is only one moment in a long historical development, that hope has always been one of the dominant forces of revolutions and insurrections, and how I still feel that hope is my conception of the future. Jean-Paul Sartre. May we laugh with, not at, ourselves this day. So since we are arse-deep in calamities, beset by the forces of evil everywhere, by savages and infidels, without food, shelter, or clothing, let us try to avert these disasters through centering, reading hexagrams, turning cards, throwing sticks, dizzily spinning, incoherently babbling, making holy sounds in our throats and hearts, and out the lips of our asses, we 6 billion squared plus in the death cities, on the plains of death, deep in the woods of despair and forests of fear, We accomplished chums of the state. We servants of the Most High. We have raised consciousness. We have raised eyebrows. We have raised voices. We have raised hands. May we find self-centered brotherhood in our convivial war universe, God versus evil. We who care not for the cares of tomorrow or the atrocities of the state today, but are interested only in being good enough, subservient enough, beautiful enough, compliant enough to earn the modest accolades of our brethren drunken on the holy servitude of belief, and hang those whose only belief is to believe not anything is trustworthy enough to be believed, at least eternally. Get your mind off the nation, the world, the incomprehensible universe. Get your mind off your dead and dying offspring, your ancestors who suffered unbelievable torment under the scourge of a fierce, harsh existence, and get your eyes on God. Yes, get your eyes on God. Weed the masses with autos de fe and KKK, host nailings, witch hunts, crusades, inquisitions, storming the gates of heaven and taking it by force as we keep our sons and daughters virgins, our wives and husbands faithful, our bank accounts solvent, our officials rich and famous, our homeless, poor, and anonymous, out of sight, out of mind, and keep praying for thy adversaries, vaporizing their iniquities, devastating their cities, razing their small encampments and villages, and keeping their pitiful fields landmined. Beginning centuries ago, the state is religion, the religion is state, using as its foundation miracles of achievement. The pyramids of Egypt and the Americas, the great stone faces of Easter Island, the organized team player monoliths of Stonehenge, ziggurats, colossi, and hanging gardens, all signatures of the greater good, all bookmarks of the summum bonum, all hashtags of Sanskritian progress, all marked trees of development beyond the jungles of human evolution, step by bloody step across the steps of self-realization, each step in the name of God, each elevation, levity above the quandary of chaos in the brutal fractalization of species that preceded the marvelously blossoming new beings of now, each atrocity for the birth of the future, the kingdom, the phylum, the family name, even as the throbbing in the genes ejaculated the genome of the superior species, alien to the struggles of the world, even as the gene is controlled, humbled, broken, and molded now. Chess pieces, kings in ransom, rooked of their royalty, queens of the silver dollar, queens of Times Square, knights in white satin, pawns in their game, bishops of the benevolence, saints of simulacra, defectors, traitors, usurpers, and workers, bands of brothers and righteously mad mothers, all of us now being here as we be here now, bearing upon our shoulders the cross of consciousness of our consciences, the mass enslavement and standardization of our parts, of our children and grandchildren, that they become meek and faithful cogs in the machinery of the overlord future, who inherit the earth in the mask of the meek, with all speculative theory made manifest nonsense under the fists of nuclear holocaust, environmental annihilation, disease, starvation, shrieking cancers and tumors, where once stood as erect as a phallus under the quasi-brilliance of the wonders of the age, the human animal, sinister yet divine. For those who follow in our stead, shall we not mythologize a great monument to ourselves? A Tower of Babel. The creation of a God they could not understand, yet were always waiting upon to change their miserable lives, who revealed himself in parables and riddles and crosswords, and to many different peoples in antagonistic forms, these Samsons of belief, these antagonistes of suffering, these saints pocked with arrows and lances, so that workers of every race, every identity, could enjoy the leisure luxury of continually engaging in holy wars. Yet, these things were flatly denied as falsehoods, pontificated upon as justice to the wicked. He had sat by as they were exterminated in plagues, environmental disasters, world wars, death camps, far-reaching genetic disorders, mental scurvations, mass starvations, watching their sons and daughters and wives and mothers get their ears and fingers and noses and nipples and testicles lopped off as they beseeched him for mercy, for the mercy of his omnipotent intervention, watching their fathers and grandfathers, sisters, brothers, children, and grandchildren blow out like cheap wax candles, like ashen horses in the storm, all the time filled with the wondering of what was the source of this, their miserable, unstoppable punishments. It must be me. It can't be God. It must be the devil. Flying onward as scrapped refuse toward their own tombstones and unmarked graves. The garbage of their lives piled into mountainous abodes for those who followed in this great cosmic jubilation. All it was, all it had ever been, generation upon generation, symbolized by a single lonely child deep in the pit of human consciousness, sitting on the stoop of ignorance, awaiting entrance through a narrow back door through which crawled the servants of the Most High arbitrators of their woeful litanies. A single psychic child awaiting his unknown father to come home, a father who asked to be the center of each moment of his child's life, yet a father who was never there, had never once been in the child's presence, except in the child's imagination, an imagination which thirsted for the father so profoundly that it accepted all rationales for the father's obvious estrangement. The child waits for his father to come home. Oh, how cruel it is, so often, asking of the trees, the clouds, the images of a face in his head to take care of his dad, protect him, and bring him home safely, for he is once again on a sales trip promoting himself to the many other children who do not have shoes or shirts or blankets to warm themselves in the dark of the frigid night. So this child must wait, must learn patience, must endure for his own good. And the child learns to fend solely for himself in this big scary yard in which he roams alone and never finds the object of his love, dreading that some great tragedy, much greater than all before, must occur to him before the father will manifest his interested presence and save the little child from catastrophic devastation. As we awaited, praying for his safe return, we were told of him as the gentle protector, but what we experienced was the wrathful disinheritor. We were told of him as definitive love incarnate, but what we experienced was the distant, the scornful, the vengeful, the jealous, the flitting presence of severity. And he kept our minds on him through our guilt, by our shame. In desperation and despair, it made us starve for a love denied, until his finality of absence made our hearts grow more alienated, bored, sick from the neglect, angry and vengefully withering, emaciated by his very words, his hollow promises, sending the same letter, the piece of his word, the particle of his attention, over and over and over. It made our hearts and minds and spirits grow beaten, abused, then hardened, defiant, full of outrage and vengeance, rebellious, sly, conniving, cruel, and in the overwhelming sense of futility, full of knowledge without wisdom, ignorant of compassion or empathy for our own lives and for the lives of our fellow humans. Romans crucified the enemies of Jupiter and the emperor. Aztecs deified the god of human sacrifice. Europeans destroyed the libraries of the Americas, burning sacred Mayan books, burning Aztec books, old tribal almanacs, ancestral wisdom, burning out old tribal shamans, eradicating in the name of God and the state and fundamental personal individual human greed and ambition, advanced civilizations, rooting out the devil, bridling the pagan adversary, liberating the primitive world from its own savage darkness in the name of truth, progress, and civilization, penitent arsons of the great Library of Alexandria, the consummate storehouses of knowledge and wisdom, forever lost into the abyss of man's homicide, of man's suicidal self-destruction, as if the messages carried by the genome were for carving the species out of existence in a Darwinian carnival of self-carnage and eradication, to rid the world of maverick ideas. In defense of the Lord, shall he not use his faithful and his faithless vessels to rot extinction upon the non-compliant savage? To make the earth safe for the sandalous footsteps of his son, amongst the thorny protrusions of knowledge not founded upon superstition, for the pounding of hoofbeats and scimitars of his holy prophets, for his thunderbolt, for his 12 names of incarnation, for his 1,000 veiled faces of eternity, for his beast with 10 heads, that the serpent might not rise up through the chakras and grab him by the heel to thrash him out of human suffering, out of human consciousness until the end of time. That human beings, upon the night of the final judgment, where each moment is that present, future, perfect, will say, one for all and all for one, may we laugh with, not at, ourselves this day. A poem by Leroy Jones, July 13th, 1963, Amiri Baraka. Tightrope. We live in fragments like speech, like the fits of wind shivering against the window, pieces of meaning pierced and strung together. The bright bead of the poem, the bright bead of your woman's laughter.
Michael, that was incredible. Thank you so much for...
See you next month, Chuck. Bye. Bye, Mike.
Hello, I'm Tom Brady from the New England Patriots, because I'm afraid if I tell you the truth, I won't be able to live my good life in America and be a pro football player on TV and rich and have a car and a house and a family in America. If I tell you the truth about America and its soldiers and veterans, I will be destroyed.
I'm Joseph, high school football coach. I'm a coward. I'm a co-conspirator in the raping and murdering and plundering of the world by America's military.
I'm Anne, emergency room nurse. I'm an American. I'm afraid of other Americans, really afraid. Hi, I'm Bill, your dentist. I want to be liked. I don't want to be an outcast. I cannot be.
Good morning. I'm Mrs. Thompson, your daughter's third period English teacher. I want to be able to exist, at least exist within a thin bubble. I get one chance at living, and I'm not going to waste it by telling you the truth. So we just all want to all say thank you to all of our nation's veterans and on-duty military for protecting us. You keep us free. You're heroes.
And now a message from the United Tribes, from the Algonquin to the Seminole to the Cherokee to the Lakota, to the Apache, to the Ojibwe, Americans, air quotes, your time is up. Look what you have done. You are a disaster, the biggest there has ever been. Climate change, massacres, fascism, poverty, the whole manifest destiny, westward expansion. You're always getting better, load of crap. Just keep it on moving, right down the Golden Gate Bridge into the Pacific Ocean and just go away. And we're the last American idiot to leave. Please turn out the lights. And please exit through the gift shop. The Revenge of the Bedbugs, the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. The Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. It means that anyone interfering with factory farms where pigs and other animals are crowded together in pens and pretty much driven crazy because pigs are not stupid, anyone interfering with that is a terrorist. And then after we bloat the animals with toxins and drive these intelligent creatures crazy, we drive them into a big building and slice their throats, hang them from chains by their legs, cut them up, and then eat them. Recently, a truck driver for an Ohio packing plant found a document apparently written by pigs whom he had taken in for slaughter. It was written on nice animal stationery. It said on top,
"Four legs good. Two legs bad."
The truck driver scanned down the paper and saw some big words and thought he had better turn it in, so he gave it to the slaughterhouse manager, who gave it to the manager of the cut floor, who passed it to the manager of the kill floor, who gave it back to the truck driver out hosing the blood from his truck in the parking lot, who sent it to his congressman who made a law that anyone this smart who cared about every living creature this much was nuts and should be charged with terrorism, and they did that. They made the law to keep everyone safe from the smart ones who cared about every living creature, but by then they were already dead. Now have a good night. Don't let the angry bed bugs bite.
This portion of tonight's program is being brought to you by the Underpants Bomber, the DC Sniper, the Times Square Fizzler, and the Al-Qaeda Conclave Mosque Corn Palace of Mitchell, South Dakota.
Hula! Baba is great. Wait, no, Allah is great and also most awesome, more than Zeus and other guys. How's it going? We are new to your country. We want to kill you and take your Wii sports software. Our high-rise lairs are too, how you say it, more of dude caves and not too gnarly and not cool for real bowling. For make benefit, glorious nation of Kebabistan. Death to Peyton Manning and NASCARs and WWF. We come from a very well-organized, well-kept, well-swept cave in the mountains of Afghanistan, far, far up in sheep nosebleed section. We did 9/11 and other things like the 93 World Trade Center bombing and other stuff for sure, lots of other stuff that we did. We are not the FBI or the CIA, haha, that's for sure. And for sure you would be a silly person who does not fit in your neighborhood to think so. We have nothing to do with George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George Bush, the senior one who sits in the front row of the World Series with his pig-resembling wife, or Osama Obama, or Barack Obama. Thank you very much. Happy times. Have a good day, and please to stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. Keep it real, and be always awesome.
And now a word from a funny thing happened on the way to the moon, a brand-new Washington, D.C. think tank staffed by American fourth-grade students who have questions about the things they were told about America in the third grade. Let's get this straight. We went to the moon 100 years ago, but we never went back. You mean to tell us, types of adults that we all know, never went back to put up Moon National Bank with the electric sign that says the moon time and temperature, and we support our darn moon troops? They did not want to incorporate Moon Mining Company? A moon logging. The really stupid adults we know have not organized moon hunting trips to kill a moon moose, moon elk, moon bear, or moon wildebeest. They've not put moon bunny rabbit heads on their walls. There are no fences in the sky to keep moon men from coming here. Nobody listening to everything the moon people are saying to each other. There are no chemtrails above the moon or Agent Orange devastation. No depleted uranium. No dead moon whales and seas or moon cow slaughterhouses. We did not want to make any moon prisons or moon land or moon world. No moon-assisted living, moon condos, moony golf. There's no moon Rushmore or moon mall. And here's the real kicker. The adults that we didn't know did not want to put up a giant United States military base. Well, we American fourth graders have come to a conclusion about the things we were taught as fact in the third grade. Our conclusions are thus. The very fact that there is no Camp Moon means we never ever went there, and they all lied. Our opinion? What? A bunch of crap. Our suggestions, based on our research, do not trust anyone over the age of 9.
And now for another episode of Waterboarding Barbara Bush, sponsored by Mr. Bubble. If we are going to torture people who we say we think are terrorists, but we know are not really terrorists because we did 9/11, there are no terrorists, no Al-Qaeda, no reason for war, and really no information we can gain other than to perpetuate the lie, go deeper into the story of the lie, build and embellish the lie fable, then why not also waterboard people who we know are terrorists, who were in fact our terrorists, who helped us to lie a long time ago and overturn our own country. And this terrorist really knows the truth. And what she knows is actually real. One or two or maybe three quick sessions in the Midland Park Mall in Midland, Texas, which are not really such a big deal anyway, right? Which changed the course of this whole country. Just one little goon afternoon, live on national TV during the seventh inning of a Rangers game. It could be a beautiful American experience, something for Ken Burns. The committee to waterboard Barbara Bush, who sat there while her husband worked to murder JFK and while her husband and son worked on the 9/11 project, while her husband invaded Panama and Iraq and thousands, millions died, and she just sat there. She knows more American history than any of us will ever know. We are the committee to waterboard Barbara Bush. It's not really that bad anyway. Endorsed by Alan Dulles, Dick Cheney, George Bush Jr., George Bush Sr., John Yoo, Barack Obama, two dental assistants, four Walmart produce managers, and millions of folks like you. Sponsored by Mr. Bubble. Get you so clean, your mother won't know you. And this just in, Mr. Bubble will now also be sponsoring the committee to waterboard Chris Hedges, John Stewart, Amy Goodman, Rachel Maddow, Matthew Rothschild, Stephen Colbert, Ruth Conniff, Eric Altman, Bill Moyers, Arianna Huffington, Bill Maher, Gary Trudeau, Michael Moore, Al Franken, Marco Zuniga, Noam Chomsky, and Garrison Keillor. Mr. Bubble wants to know why the liberal so-called radical writers do not ever mention the obvious scams of 9/11, Boston, and Sandy Hook. And while they think they are radical writers in fighting the good fight they are either bought or paid for, or they are consciously skirting around the edges of the real issues, like frightened water bugs around a swamp, and maybe they should just give up and get construction jobs. Mr. Bubble sees that end. Mr. Bubble is confused. Mr. Bubble wants answers. Mr. Bubble wants the truth.
This is Andy Rooney, reporting for the New American Dream Radio Show. Do you ever wonder, well, kind of people we have running our government? If we really knew the truth, I believe we'd be astonished. Forget about George Washington and the cherry tree, Ronald Reagan making America strong again, the George Bushes riding into the baseball game on national TV to throw out the first ball, then sitting in the front row. Forget about Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, the new liberal Democrats who care about you. SpongeBob, The Simpsons, and South Park, Calvin and Hobbes, Snoopy. They have more to tell us than these guys. At least in the Soviet Union, when they saw nonsense and lies printed in Pravda and TASS, at least they knew they were lies. We're still at the infancy stage in our development, not questioning the lies. And so the next time there's a bombing or a threat of a bombing or a bunch of blue backpacks found in Bemidji, the healthy American, the true American, the real American thinks CIA, FBI, the police. The real patriot refuses to stand for the national anthem. And rather than another knee-jerk reciting of the Pledge of Allegiance, he says, not until I get some questions answered, because this is important stuff. This has been Andy Rooney, reporting for the New Nightly News. Seriously, people, don't you ever wonder? Well, it's been another long week in Newtown, my hometown at the end of the empire. It's time for the publication of the new sophomore history textbook, the bread and butter, a 3B1K publishing house managed by Nicostatus Greenberg in Newtown. Seems nobody's paying much attention to history these days. What is he to do? Well, he's running all over town to talk to people to figure things out, for one thing. And today, while Nick runs around, the publishing house historians are meeting in the castle. A small man wearing a light blue shirt with a black tie, tan pants, black shoes, trotted around and around down the stone stairs, toting a torch that cast light and shadow on the stone walls. The castle, which nestled the Seventh Green with its stone arches and towers, battlements, gatehouse, drawbridge, and moat, housed the history department of Beantree, Barkham, Bangor, Crescentians, Incorporated. It had been shipped from Dundee, Scotland, on a boat. Old man Beantree, Barkham, Bangor, and Crescentians all went along and each stayed in their own tower looking out over the sea on the whole way back. The The moat was a little stream that started on the other side of town, ran around the seventh and ninth holes, and emptied into the river. An emergency Phi Alpha Theta meeting was being held that evening. It was supposed to be the Historian of the Year award toast, but the honorary extinguishing of the electric lights and the subsequent lighting of the torches had already taken place, except for the torches. And the small man was in one giant, big-ass hurry. He clattered over the stone floor and lit the first torch, and the light was quickly passed down by anxious historians in the robes and caps of their various universities to the torches along the long table. They drank instant mead from thick pint glasses that were frosted an hour ago under a giant replication on a projected screen on the front wall. The dead Blaze Thornpine, his head being unzipped from the black body bag by four hands wearing blue rubber gloves. The thing was that the standard media manipulation event was supposed to have been just like every other year, boring, depicting some scene from history where someone gets killed. The newspaper covers it. Everyone knows that the new edition is coming out and they should buy their tickets for the subtitle banquet and the pageant and get their buttons to wear to show they bought them and not get rocks thrown at them by the local children, the whole town tradition. But somebody messed up. Somehow, Blaze Thornpine, specialist Roman Empire, also in the early stages of a larger project exploring the relationship between ecology, state power, culture, and social order in the Roman Empire, had been the person running from the home on 4th Street, decorated in the front to look like the Ford Theater, and shot, for real, to death. By whom? Why? How? Someone said it was Sonny the janitor, but someone else said, no, that can't be right. I would also like to draw your attention. Max Karp, head of the department pro tem, stood at the far end of the table, not unlike a midget Dumbledore in his purple robes. Gray cane, whenever he came to these meetings because of the slippery damp bricks. He pointed with the blue end toward the new sign on the wall that could not be seen very well at all in the low light. Well, in any case, it said, whatever historians say is history, is history. Dramatically, with a flick of his hips, he ran the pool cue across as if an air underline to point at the other wall, where hung a banner that had been there for some time. If it's in the history book, then it's history. Someone hustled over with a chair for Max Karp, as he was not overly tall, and some were complaining they could not see or hear what he was saying, only the very top of his floppy green cap. He stood on a chair with his pool cue. Behind him appeared a screen on which the evening's discussion points appeared. The construction and maintenance of public myth. Conspiracy theory, so dangerous we must outlaw it. Teacher, journalist, watchdog on power. That's their job. That's all we have. The only thing that can rescue society are real historians. The consensus hallucination that passes for reality. These were just an overview, a summary, a review that they went over every year during the closed portion of the Historian of the Year banquet. It was true that Blaze Thornpine had been selected as Historian of the Year, that he should rightly be in the shootout in the body bag, and when the reporter showed up at the traditional opening of the ambulance, that he would take the photo of the unveiling of the body bag, and Blaze Thornpine's smiling face would be on the front page of the local weekly newspaper, and all would be well. Cycles repeated, tradition, safety, remembrance, the start of the book production celebration and new fiscal year. But not this time. This year was different. Moms and children were crying. People locking their doors. Police cars seen in the streets. Actually moving about town. Max Karp yawned, pushing the pool cue way up over his head. Called for break time. While everyone peed, all but two of the torches were put out, and as they were about to enter the really closed portion of the night's meeting, everyone scooted their chairs closer together, battling the brick, and saw the notes of the recent after-hours meeting of the historians at the Times New Roman, the foo-foo version of history. History is heroes and wars and whatever the government does, one of them hissed freely. I know. Race, gender, social class, a narrative. It's rubbish, hissed the second. You tell geography with a nice story? Here's where crap is, that's it. The dumb fucking kids don't know their history, and that's our fault. They want to only watch TV and wonder who's their daddy. Our fault, the other two chimed away impeccably on time, like Big Ben. It's where it's all headed. It can't be stopped, unless, like what Rita said at the meeting, one of them said to the other. If we could discover a big mistake in the book, then that gets big publicity, and then we do a big thing about correcting it. Then we get all this free notice of our history book, and all that better for us. Better yet, said another. We insert a gigantic gaffe. Don't tell anyone. Somebody finds it later, and boom, the whole thing comes tumbling down. So, Max said as he stepped down from the chair and put both hands on the table, looking around the table. I guess the idea is that if they're going to make all these changes, we are not going to allow it. It's history when we say it's history. Am I right? I said, am I right? He raised his pool cue over his head with both hands as the historians shoved their chairs back more violently than ever before. Stood and shoved their thick glass mugs high into the air, right up the asses of the ones who would edit their copy. Ah! Like hell I would. The room grew quiet. But wait just one darn minute. There. They all made eye contact with each other at once, glints of eyes passing back and forth across the table in the near dark, like disco night at the bowling alley. Who put live ammo in the gun that shot Blaze Thornpine? Who was the shooter? He was supposed to be depicting how the traitor, the lone nut traitor, murdered the president. That could have been any of us. Blaze Thornpine wasn't even interested in Civil War studies. He was an expert in the Roman Empire and stuff like that. Oh, my God. The last torch went out, perhaps from a breeze in an open high window. Some say all the historians ran from the room, bumping over the torches, some with embers still burning hot. And that's what burned down the castle. Some say it was lightning that struck the castle just as the historians were plotting to put in a subtle error in the history book on purpose. Or witchcraft. Some say we will never know. Some few dare say, well then, it's just a year for our cubbies, huh? That's the news from Newtown. Where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average. The new American dream means never having to say some question or idea is not valid. We're allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions, no hidden black military budget, no UFO files Americans cannot see, no JFK documents that will not be opened during our lifetimes, no destroyed RFK murder photos by the LA police, no evidence from Ground Zero taken away before we can even look at it. We are not the USSR of the 1960s. This is supposed to be America. This is our dream, to become America, the new America, the real hope of the world. What we need is a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. Right now we live on lies, we subsist on lies, but it's not really living. What we need in America is a truth commission like they had in South Africa to heal their broken country. We need to put certain people on the stand, and we need to be allowed to ask questions because our country is surely broken as well. The troops are not protecting us. Let somebody spin on the day's news. The troops serve the empire. They're not heroes. They kill and plunder for the empire. The heroes in our country are the protesters, the ones who go face to face with the empire, those in the Plowshares movement, for one example. We'd like to thank you for joining us tonight, and we hope you'll be back next week and every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. right here on Revolution Radio. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
And thank you to our guests, Julius Alafong, Michael Hannes, Karen Kutkowski, and Phil Ferruzio. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Emily Parker. Good night, Ben Wheeler. Good night, Crystal Campbell. Good night, Nancy Lanza. Good night, James Foley and Stephen Sotlob. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Reverend Pinckney. Good night, Muhammad Atta, Skip Wells, and good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Imagine there's no heaven, it's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no country, it isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion to. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one.